Okay, so for chapter 3, it was mainly about portrayal and data and how that played a big effect and how people read the data and how it affect people's, you know, perspectives on whether or not something is good or bad.
Okay, and the title of chapter 3 is The Little Figures That Are Not There. So, in the book, they started out giving the example of Dolce's toothpaste, and it reported that 23% of the users had less cavities. Now, they kind of tricked us up because Dolce's, they only used 12 people for their sample size. And the chapter was explaining to us that when you use a small sample size, then it's easier to see a difference. And if you compare that to flipping a coin, let's say you flip a coin 10 times, it's possible that you may only get 2 tails and 8 heads. And so you can say that 80% of the time you get heads, but that actually isn't true because if you would flip the coin 100 times, it would look more like 50% heads and 50% tails.
Yeah, not necessarily exact, but it would be more around that range of 50-50. And because of the fact that they only used 12 members to conduct this experiment and try to prove their point, it made them seem more valid. Also, another experiment they had did was they had vaccinated 450 children for polio and 680 weren't vaccinated. And they had said that all these kids did not have polio at the end of this whole experiment. Each group did not have polio. But at the time, during that age, it was only 2 cases of polio. So that whole case was invalid and was just a way to prove their point. There are many different types of graphs out there that help people better portray their data and helps it visually look more, you know, satisfying and positive. So, for instance, there are a bunch of different graphs, such as the cumulative graphs. They usually make things proceed as if though it's a steady incline.
Mr. Miles, he recommended that we do some research on the article, and it's called How to Lie with Data Visualization. And it's pretty similar to the book that we're reading on How to Lie with Statistics. And so they gave the example of a graph, and it's titled If Bush Tax Cuts Expire. And so in this graph, it says now the tax rate is about 35%, and then they predicted as of June 1st, 2013, that it'll be about 39.6%. And this is all about what happens with the y-axis. The y-axis really controls how high and how short a graph could be, because if you change the numbers, then like when you're comparing two graphs, two bars, they can look pretty similar in size, or they can look very different on how you you graph and look at things on a y-axis.
Another example that was mentioned on this article was the cumulative graph. And those graphs usually are portrayed to be more linear and have like a steady slope. And these graphs are pretty good when it comes to trying to prove your point. And and this graph that was mentioned in the article, it was a cumulative annual revenue. And it showed a steady incline over the years that the revenue annually that was made kept increasing. And that is something important when you're trying to portray a positive or a positive factor of a company or anything of that sort.
Yeah, so like Ottawa was saying, the graph, it goes up from 2004 to 2014 it seems like a steady rate, because of course when you see things cumulate, it's going to go up. But if you will look at a non-cumulative annual revenue graph, you will see how the rates increase over the years, and you can see how maybe one year it went down and it'll like have like a ripple. But if you wanted to see, if you really wanted to look deeper into a cumulative graph, then you would have to find the slope, and the slope would tell you whether it's positive or negative. So people really can find ways to lie with statistics and make it seem like things are going up when they're actually going down. And
as we're going down through the article, it's a lot of things that are mentioned on here, and when you're reading graphs, you really need to pay attention to the y-axis, not even just that, but the x-axis at times too, because the way you read a graph really helps you determine how accurate the information is. Just looking at it from plain sight, it may seem to look one way, but once you read it, you understand it, and you actually you grasp the information that it's trying to portray without just looking at it and assuming. So, for example, one thing that was mentioned on this article was the same data but different y-axis. So in these two graphs, it's mentioning interest rates, and it's the y-axis for the first one goes from 2008 to 2012 and increases every year by one. And the two graphs that I'm about to talk about are the same data but different y-axis. And for the first one, the y-axis starts at 3.14% and increases all the way up to 3.154%. And it increases at a rate of 0.002. What is that?
And then on the right, you can see the second graph. It starts at 0.00 and it increases to 3.5. But on the left, since the y-axis is different, it looks like from years 2008 and 2012, each year it looked like it was increasing and going up in a positive slope. But if you look on the second graph, all the bars look fairly the same size.
And that is all because of the way that the y-axis was given. So for the second one, the y-axis only increased by 0.50, whereas the first graph had increased by 0.002, which was a slight increase in numbers, but it allowed you to see the difference in changes over years. Whereas the second one, you could barely see that because the y-axis increased by 0.50, and if we were to look at the second graph, you would see that over years there has barely been any change in the interest rate.
Now, in the second article that I read, it was about Tim Cook, and I guess he's like the leader of Apple. He showed a graph of all the cumulative iPhone sales, and it's funny because the graph had no y-axis, so it was no way of figuring out whether the sales were increasing by the millions or increasing by the hundreds. And so that was one of the biggest errors on the graph. And so, the iPhone sales, it didn't account for all the phones that were being replaced or all the iPhone users that threw away their phones or had to get it fixed or broken iPhones. And so that was another error. And so somebody else, they redid the graph, and they did it by quarterly sales instead of yearly sales. And so the overlays in the graph showed that the sales of the product has actually declined over the last three quarters. And so I found that very interesting that Apple would have one of these problems, because I see a lot of people around my school who have Apple products, and Apple is known as one of the top and biggest iPhone sellers, like smartphone sellers. So that was really, really, really interesting. And going back to chapter 3, another example the book gave was when they talked about how toddlers how they are supposed to sit up by a certain age. And the bad thing about this was that if parents saw that their child has not sat up by this age, they may worry and think something is wrong with their child and may want to get all these tests run on their child and take them to a doctor and may think something is physically wrong with them when that might not necessarily be the case. When you use a certain way to average up something, like how we talked about before, how the difference between mode, median, and mean and range, sometimes you may get in trouble with that.
Yeah, not everything can necessarily be proven statistically, but that whole theory of your child sitting up at a certain age within these certain years means that they're fine, and if the child learns to sit at a different age, it does not necessarily always mean that something is wrong with that child. But as I said, like, everything can't be proven statistically. There are certain things that don't go with that whole theory.
Yeah. And along with that, if you would want to, like, see if your child is in the normal rank, a good way to view the average would be the range, because it was said that kids, many of the parents, they were relieved when they found out when their child was still in the normal rank, even if they haven't set up by a certain age. And another thing is that the words normal and desirable get confused. And maybe it would be good if your child set up at a certain age, and maybe you'll feel like your child is a little advanced if they set up at their age. But if they haven't set up by their age, that doesn't mean that they're not normal. So it's good that they told us the difference between those two words. And actually the doctor, Dr. Kinsey, that reported this, he was actually accused of corrupting youth by giving them ideas that they were supposed to uphold. So I guess the moral of the story is that everything can't be proven statistically, and sometimes in life you gotta just wait things out and let people develop at their own rate. Okay, so moving on. In chapter 4, they give us the example that two children have been given an IQ test. The two children's names are Linda and Peter.
So Linda, it was considered the smarter child in this case, and that was because of her score, and she had scored 101, and Peter's score was 98, and 100 was the average. So in this case, it was bad to assume that Linda was a smarter child, because this intelligence doesn't measure leadership, creativity, or imagination, and the tests are usually given in schools and are cheap. So if you really think about it, it doesn't measure those different types of components. It only measures intelligence, and there's intelligence itself is not just whether or not you can answer certain questions. And also, if you really look at it, it's only off by a couple points. Like, there could have been something that was off with the child that day, or, you know, it's different factors to it. It'd be bad to assume that Linda was the smarter child just because of a test.
Yeah, and maybe Peter didn't eat his breakfast. But that's a whole different statistic. Okay, that's the final ending of our podcast.
So I hope you guys enjoyed. Have a blessed day.
So for the intelligence test, I thought it was interesting because IQ tests don't really measure important things like leadership and creativity. It's basically a no personality, and I didn't really like how he used the corn reference to make an analogy of the IQ test testing intelligence. So I kind of compared, well, I made a new analogy saying that, like,
okay,
would be something like, if you're testing animals and how well they can climb a tree, someone will succeed and some will fail because not everybody is accustomed to climbing a tree and everything. So I think that's a better representation of an intelligence test.